Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We're celebrating our 15th anniversary at Heritage Radio Network. And today I'm on the road. I'm in Boston, Massachusetts at the Lamplighter CX, which is a special little outpost of Lamplighter Brewing in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We'll be talking about craft malt and spent grain. So this is a pretty neat show, and we're going to talk about the importance of freshness in food and everything else, and upcycling your spent grain and everything. Very cool shows. Two guys we talked to 3 years ago. We're back for updates. So, guys, let's introduce yourselves.
I'm Tyler Fitzpatrick from Lamplighter Brewing Company.
And I'm Kyle Fiascanero from Brewers Foods.
Okay, so we talked online 3 years ago, and it was very, very eye-opening. It was really, Kyle, you're the one that kind of introduced me to this whole New England craft malt scene. We talked with Blue Ox Malt, who I've gotten to know really well. Remind our listeners what you do, because you're baking crackers, but it's more than that.
Yeah, so at Brewers Foods, what we do is we make crackers, chips, cookies, and pretzels with the leftover grain from brewing, so the spent grain. So we go to brewery, we pick up this grain. Instead of it ending up in landfills or even farms, my belief is that if somebody grew this grain, they took care of it, and they we have a responsibility to use that grain to the best of its ability, and I believe that's to feed people.
Well, and we had a great story with you in May of 2021, and you were a chef in Brooklyn, and it's a really great story that we can post and revisit. But the reason I'm here is, first, we want to follow up on craft malt. Last year, I was at the craft malt conference. I saw Tyler. Just tell us about the importance of craft malt in Cambridge, and catch us up. Last time we were at your regular, you tell us the locations, because it was a Cambridge Street location. Now we're out here at this CX. What is CX?
Yeah, so CX is Cambridge Crossing. It's a new development, part of the Green Line extension. So they redid Leachmere Station on the Green Line, and then they put a decent-sized development with a lot of offices and apartment buildings, and there's some restaurants here. We put a tap room here. So it's our second location, and our primary location is on Broadway in Cambridge, about a 10-minute drive from here, depending on traffic. But yeah, that's where we brew all the beer. We barrel-age beers here. We barrel-age beers in another warehouse in Woburn, but there's no retail there. But yeah, we've been working with craft maltsters in the New England area for many years now. There's Valley Malt in Massachusetts, Stone Path in Massachusetts, Blue Ox, obviously, in Maine, which we work with a lot. And there's many other smaller ones, too, in this region. But we love it. You know, I could go into it, but just freshness, quality, and just supporting your local agricultural economy, as well as other economies in this region, trying to keep the dollar you spend within your region as much as you possibly can while maintaining a healthy business and, you know, cost of goods, and focusing on, well, where is the barrier between doing right and, you know, succeeding as a business? It's always on my mind, and always looking at different beers and where we can support local maltsters and where we have to make more cost conscious decisions.
And Kyle, when we first met you, I mean, what you're doing is new. I think you've been on a couple of the Heritage Radio Network shows. You make a cracker that's great for cheese plates, and you also make pita chips. The last couple of years, just bring us up to speed, because I've seen you do a great job of getting out there, selling your product. But there's a story about the spent grain that I feel like we have to really revisit today.
Right. Yeah. You know, selling crackers is not easy, believe it or not. You know, you gotta compete there with every other person trying to sell their crackers. And those aren't small companies. And then in addition to that, we have another story to tell, the story of upcycling. Yeah, upcycling's probably been done, you know, since food's been around forever, right? We've been using food to its fullest potential everywhere, pigs, wheat, everything. But it seemed like through, you know, the industrialization of bread and a lot of food in our supermarket, people kind of forgot about where our food comes from and what's left over from other industries too. So, you know, it's been a lot of growth in the last couple of years. And I hope to, in the next year or two, bring it to the next level and hopefully bring some other businesses into the fold and create kind of like an upcycled, spent grain upcycled center for New England, Boston area, maybe where a few breweries can bring their grain. I can upcycle it into products, and not just my products, maybe other products too. So that's a project we're working on now.
Well, first, let's talk about in food processing. Even in the highest level, there's waste. A friend of ours makes bagels. They stone ground grain, and there's also a byproduct. We were just talking about that. Tell us.
Yeah. So within the flour milling industry, Kyle could probably speak better on like the byproducts of that. But I know I personally make a brown bread at home that uses some extra wheat bran. And wheat bran is just a byproduct of milling wheat into flour. And you don't want it in the flour, so it's separated out. And that and the germ gets sold separately sometimes as additives. But, you know, to scale, there's so much more than, you know, moves through retail markets. So what are they doing with, I don't know the number, but like, let's say that 85% of germ and bran that doesn't get used or packaged and sold, it probably just goes to a waste stream somewhere. So I think Kyle's really focused on a sector of the brewing industry that has a lot of upside potential, because brewers use their malted barley, malted wheat, malted rye. We get as much of the starches and sugars and nutrients as we can from it, and then we get rid of it because we've gotten what we want. Now, that waste product we don't need, and we want to get rid of as fast as possible before it starts to get smelly. So we work with a company to take it away for us. Now, they'll bring it to a dairy farm and, you know, sell it to farmers for supplemental feed. But still, there's way more spent grain in this country as a whole, never mind New England, than gets used. A lot of it probably still goes to landfills too. And there's so much you can do with that as, you know, fiber nutrient additives to food systems. And Kyle's seen that world. And, you know, you can see when you talk to him about spent grain and Brewers Foods, like his eyes just widen and he sees the potential. Because he knows how many brewers are dealing with spent grain on a daily basis, and it is not their priority. It is not their priority to upcycle it. Our mission is to make beer, and once we have that spent grain, we need to get rid of it so that we have more space and, you know, can have a sanitary environment to finish that beer. You know, so there's a lot of potential there throughout every brewery, no matter what size.
Kyle, to take us back to when you were a chef in Brooklyn,
yeah,
and you walked by Kelso Brewing. Tell us how you first figured out that you could work with spent grain and just how much of it is. I got excited when I said that, but there's a lot of spent grain.
Yeah, I was riding my bicycle to work one day in Brooklyn, and I passed a dumpster in I think it was Fort Greene area. Yeah, and right in the almost in the middle of the street was a 5-yard dumpster packed with spent grain. Smelt delicious, looked delicious. So I took some back to the restaurant, made a super simple cracker, And it was only after doing that that I saw the servers explaining it to the customers, and then the customers explaining it to other customers, and you could see how just light bulb after light bulb was going off. It was just a very easy concept for people to understand, from knowing nothing about how beer is made to almost understanding how beer is made in a matter of like moments. Maybe I didn't know as much then as I do now, but the ability to tell someone a story that quickly with the product is a very special ingredient when trying to sell something.
Yeah. Tyler, one of my favorite things is when I walk into a brewery and I can smell that bready smell from the grain. At what step in the process does that wonderful smell get released? And how would you describe that smell?
Yeah, that's the mashing process. That's the first step in making beer. When I say malt, I'm referring to the malting process. So you're generally, when a brewer says malt, they're referring to malted barley, barley being the cereal grain, other cereal grains, wheat, rye, oats. And all these things can be malted and germinated and then kilned to stop the germination. The germination process is convincing the grain that it is about to grow into another plant. So what it does is it breaks down its food source to grow into a seedling. And it starts to say to itself, hey, I'm going to need to use this so I can grow to be 2 inches tall. And then it'll start to get nutrients from the soil. So once it starts breaking down its food source, the maltster then stops it to basically end its germination process. And then they dry it out and make it shelf stable. And it's then shipped to brewers as malted barley or malted oats or malted wheat. And that is then milled by a brewer, crushed up to the right size so that in your mash tun, surface area is available, but it's not too fine that you're going to clog your brewing vessel. That mash tun, you get hit a very specific temperature. Enzymes in the mash are activated to then further break down those available starches into simpler sugars. Those simpler sugars are going to be fermented by yeast. And you can control in the mashing process how much fermentable sugar you're going to create and how much unfermentable sugar you're going to create to some degree. But that smell is from the hot steeping of malt in the mashing process. And it just releases a nice bready aromatic, aroma into the brewery. My favorite is when we're doing porters or stouts, because you get that breadiness combined with the roasted barley and smells a little chocolatey too. You can, walking up to the brewery about a block away, you know when we're brewing a batch of our porter or something, because you can smell it from a block away.
Yeah, and at the right scale, there's nothing like it. Walk in a brewery in the morning. Yeah. Kyle, back to spent grain. Tell our listeners, let's say I'm a home brewer, I got a batch of spent grain. Mm-hmm. What's an intro recipe if you wanted to bake something with it?
If I was a home brewer, which I'm not because I have lots of friends that make really good beer, but what I would do is I would just take some of that grain from the mash. I would put it I would save it. So I'd probably, for a home cook, I would put it into a gallon zipper bag, lay it nice and flat, and just pop it right in the freezer. And then you could have spent grain whenever you want. You don't have to worry about it going sour in your fridge or throwing it out. You can, first things first, let's get it stable. So get it in a zipper bag and freeze it. And once you have it stable, I would just pick any one of your favorite recipes you have. It could be any, the point of entry is very low. It could be any recipe you have. Just put a little of that spent grain right in there.
So let's say I have a recipe like two cups of flour bread.
Yep.
How much spent grain would you put?
Throw a cup of spent grain in there. Yeah, one cup, and then see how it comes out. And you just do it again and do it again and do it again and do it again until you get something that you like. Yeah, that's the easiest way to get started. And you'll see, like Tyler said, that smell, when they're boiling, that smell and that aroma, they strain out the mash to get the wort, right? But if you've ever strained anything in your life, there's a lot of liquid left over of what you strain out. So that's all that I get. So I get so much residual flavor from the malt that Tyler wants, but he just can't get all of it. So I get all of that roasty notes, you know, that people really, really want for bacon, you know, just by default. So,
yeah, when brewers talk about their brew house efficiency, they usually talk in a percentage, and that's basically per pound how much of the available sugars in that malt you are extracting into your the rest of your process. So if you're brewing at 85% efficiency, which is decent for a craft brewer, you're leaving behind 15% of the starches that you just couldn't get, whether it's just you have to mill the grain a little bit looser to for the sake of your mash tun, or, you know, another step in the process that you just have to leave behind that extra 15%. So brewers do the best they can to get as much as they can, but there are limitations when it comes to the system setup, the size, your processes. So there's tons of flavor and nutrients and starch and potential sugars left behind in spent grain. So yeah, I mean, you could even make a sourdough starter from it too, because that's how a lot of brewers make some kettle sours. There's naturally occurring lactobacilli on malted barley. And, you know, it's the same species you find in some sourdough starters as well. So there's a lot of potential there. And there's when it comes to supply and demand, there's a lot of supply.
So how's that been for you, Kyle? I mean, you started baking and you had a few favorites that you were picking up spent grain from, but very quickly you moved beyond that.
Yeah. I remember, I think maybe the first month Lamplighter was open, I showed up with a bag, and I asked a bartender, probably one of the owners, can I have some spent grain? And then Tyler came out and he says, I want to meet whoever wants to take all my spent grain. But it was just me with a bag. So I took a little bit, and that's how it began. Quickly after that, I started the company. Shortly after that, I started the company. Then I started working with Cambridge Brewing Company. Learned a ton from them. Just how to grow, how to take more grain. Then I ended up taking all of their grain from their day of brewing. So yeah, it just grew from, you know, a smaller brewery to another smaller brewery to a bigger brewery. After Cambridge Brewing Company, then we went to Zero Gravity, you know, and then we just keep outgrowing breweries and we just keep taking all the grain. So they really, like Tyler said, there's just no end to my supply. And when I see an oversupply of something, and for example, when you see people not having enough food, they're just, you know, there needs to be something done about it. And if I can't just do it all at once, I need to start little by little. And that's kind of like the whole idea behind just selling a cracker is just something that everyone can eat, right? It's something everyone can understand. So it's a very low entry point to understand like what I'm really trying to do, which is just take all of this product and feed people with it. So crackers, chips, pretzels, cookies, all very easy things to understand. And then hopefully one day that'll lead into flour, baking mixes, cereal, just like everyday foods that, I mean, it's not crazy to think that this should be in every cupboard. A product made with spent grain should and could be in every cupboard in the country. Just because it's there. Like it's just craziness to think that you're growing something and not using it.
I've heard cool stories of breweries or distilleries trying to do a full circle where they're feeding pigs with the spent grain, and then they're serving that pig on the menu. I've even been in Amsterdam where there's the egg brewery, and for years they sent the spent grain across the water in the bay to a sheep farmer, and they got back Camembert that was fed spent grain. But you're really the first person I've met who's not just talking about this, but stuck with it. And it's quite amazing to see you 3 years later.
Yeah, it's wild. I am a sole proprietor, and there's no other people that take a paycheck from my company, but that's ridiculous to say because people help me every single day. I have partner bakeries that help me make cookies. I have breweries that give me grain. I have people that help me process the grain, just friends and family. So it's a very much anyone that's had the product or honestly, anyone that's ever spent a dollar of their money on my product, I definitely consider them part of the company. I'm probably not going to ever be filthy rich. So I think that's my advantage. I don't have that same mindset of other food companies. I just want to make sure that we had this idea of doing upcycled spent grain into food. I just want to make sure that while doing it, we do it correctly and then we don't mess it up for, you know, whatever, our kids' generations after this. You know, I think this is my moment to make sure we do something correctly. And lots of people will help me get here.
Yeah, you brought up the point of like that full circle brewing idea. And I mean, in that analogy, it's, you know, you're still sending the grain to a food source. You're a farm brewer might feed their pigs or their cows or their sheep as a supplemental feed spent grain. And what that's doing is not only feeding the animal, but also expediting the composting process of that grain. Put it through an animal's gut, and it's going to quickly turn into something that can go back into the soil. And I mean, that's, to me, is a beautiful system, that full circle brewing idea, when you could theoretically grow your own barley, brew with that barley, feed it to the animals on your farm, compost it, and then turn that compost back into the soil for nutrients for the next year's barley. And yeah, you're putting it towards different food systems. What Kyle's doing is he's saying, wait a second, don't feed it to the animals. Let's feed it to people too. Like, this is still good. Still plenty of good stuff in this. And we have so much of it that why shouldn't humans be consuming this as well?
It's like the everlasting gobstopper of food production.
Yeah. I mean, if, you know, people love beer. And, you know, as long as we keep making beer across the country, we're going to keep having spent grain.
Well, and then in your time, Tyler, as a brewer, has the handling for breweries of spent grain changed or evolved?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it has. In my time in the brewing industry, you know, we're always at Lamplighter, we're always looking for better ways to handle it. Because, you know, 55 pounds of dry grain might weigh, you know, 125 pounds when after it's wet. You know, you try and get as much of that moisture out as possible through the, you know, sparging and draining process, but it still retains and absorbs a lot of moisture. So it's heavy. And if you're putting that in a trash can and you fill that trash can up to the brim, that is really heavy to move. And if you're talking about a 10-barrel brew house, you're probably filling 4 or 5 trash cans. That's really hard to move. And then a farmer shows up in a pickup truck. Hopefully you have a forklift to get it up onto the bed of his pickup truck, but then the farmer has to bring it somewhere and then dump it out. So it's a very cumbersome thing to move because it's so heavy. And it's one of the things that, you know, scaling wise, when you're talking about home brewing, yeah, you're just dealing with a 5-gallon or 10-gallon batch. And that might be, you know, a couple buckets worth of spent grain. No problem. I can dump it in my yard and compost it, or, you know, freeze it and use some in baking. And let's say you want to open a brewery, the scale at which you have to deal with that now is much harder. You're dealing with way more volume and weight of a byproduct. So what do you do with it? Because just putting in buckets isn't going to be sustainable in the long term if you're brewing every week or every day. So these days we have a drop bottom containers that we wheel up to our mash tun. We grain out into them, and then we can lift them from the top with the forklifts and drive them over a flatbed truck or a box truck with a dump truck that we just pull a lever and the bottom drops out. And so all the grain just falls into the truck. And then that truck drives around to different breweries, picks up grains, and then drives out to dairy farms. But yeah, handling spent grain can be really challenged for most brewers. If you have a lot of money, you might have a spent grain conveyor system or auger that basically carries all that wet spent grain into a spent grain silo somewhere outside. And then it just sits in that. And then a truck can pull up underneath it. And, you know, you pull the chute and it all just drops out into the truck.
Sounds like a job for Bob the Builder.
Yeah,
exactly. I know you guys have kids. Like that's what I'm thinking of. Bob the Builder TV show, moving all the stuff around.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the we joke a lot in the brewing industry that you kind of have to be a jack of all trades, and that's why a lot of brewers come from different industries. You meet a lot of brewers who are former engineers or electrical engineers or plumbers or microbiologists too, because there's a little bit of everything in making beer. And this is an area where there's a lot of engineering involved to build the right infrastructure to carry heavy loads of a byproduct. So, you know, how are you going to do it most efficiently, safely, within the constraints of your facility? That's where you have to put your engineering, your Bob the Builder hat on to think of the best way that you could possibly do it.
And Kyle, your ethos, I mean, upcycle food, why did that strike such a chord with you? I mean, you could have been baking with anything.
Right. So I was lucky enough to go on a little journey on the Appalachian Trail when I was younger. On that journey, I found a field guide for foraging. Not a big reader, but this book spoke to me. I read it cover to cover several times, lots of time when hiking. So I just fell in love with the ability to just find food where others don't necessarily think food is. You know, that's what foraging is, just finding food. You know, it just exists around us.
I've been on a walk with Kyle through the woods, and he's like picking up, what is it, hen of the woods? He's like, oh, right here, check this out. And I'm like, where did that come from? He like, he has a radar for it.
Yes. But will you tell people where which woods those are in?
No.
So yeah, you can never, you don't really like, even if you take someone that's been foraging for their whole life, you just put them in a city, it's not going to stop. You know, they're always going to see things that stick out to them. And also I worked in some pretty nice restaurants. So in nice restaurants, it's kind of like food waste boot camp. You don't waste anything. Because then you'll lose money. And, you know, that's what restaurants go out of business, when you waste money. So between those two things, it was just kind of like being a cook and then being a forager, having my own little foraging business. That just did all kind of collectives. And then when I saw the spent grain, it was just like, oh, this is just easy. Like I see a problem. Like, I don't know how to fix it, but I'm going to try to fix it. And that was probably like eight, nine years ago that happened. And Brewers has been a company for 7 years completely. So it's been a while. And now I think we're finally at a point where we have the business behind us. You know, we have some good locations across the country, a regional spread's really good. Have a pretty loyal.
You got your bacon down, you got your packaging, you got some distribution.
Yeah, we're like, everything's turning pretty well. I think now is the right time to take the next step and figure out how I can take a brewery like Tyler and other breweries in the region, and I can just completely solve their problem. And then I can turn it into another business.
So this is why we're here today. You called me up a couple weeks ago with a crazy new idea. So tell them what it is, because I'd never heard of it and I never thought of it.
Yeah. So the technology exists to dry the spent grain, dry it to a point at which it could be milled and used into my products. That's what I do at a different scale. But what I want to do is I want to buy the best machinery, and I want to turn this region into the first region in the country that takes spent grain collectively. Let's just use the Boston area. Takes all of the spent grain from the Boston area, brings it to the facility. We dry it in this dryer, and then we can have it go to animal feed. We can have it go to consumer packaged goods like my products, and we can turn it into bread. We can send it to a bakery. We can send it to some, you know, food banks. We can really, at that point, we just took a product that was free and we just gave it a lot of value. Right now, it's not cheap to process my spent grain. A few different people touch it.
So wait, what happens? So there's all this heavy, wet spent grain. Mm-hmm. The brewers deal with it. It gets put on a truck. Bob the Builder drives it
right
to the next spot.
Right. So we pick it up. bring it to a location to have it dried, gets dried, then it goes to a location to get milled, it gets milled, and then it goes to my bakery. But what I want to do is I want to turn that all into one operation. I want to take all the spent grain, bring it to my facility, and I want it to leave as food. So that's the goal. And that's why I called you. I wanted to kind of like put out the Jimmy bat signal kind of like float this idea around. And I think we've got some good feelers out and some people want to get involved. And I think if I'm going to continue to do brewers for the rest of my life, it has to go in this direction. Or else I feel like it's a little bit of a disservice to the world, right? You see a problem, if you don't do anything about it, you're just adding to the problem.
So what's the new toy? But also, is anyone else doing this? Or are there big breweries that have their spent grain go right into a dryer and then it comes out as crackers?
Right. So there's the piece of machinery is a barrel dryer. They're notoriously expensive just because of the technology that goes into them. Very easy to operate. You load spent grain in and it comes out dry. But operating costs to get started are pretty expensive for a small company like me. But
so what is like dehydrating? Is it toasting?
Yeah, it's infrared drying. So no microorganisms can survive. So there's a kill step. So that means it's completely suitable for human consumption and extremely low moisture content. So shelf stable, what was the other question?
Well, the brewers add a bunch of water to it to get to a certain temperature where, you know, you can convert starches to sugars, and then you remove that liquid that's now called wort, and then you'll typically sparge the bed of wet grain too with hot water to just pretty much rinse off as much of the sugars as you can and extract it from the bottom of the tank under the false bottom. So that's the separation of the physical barley and the wort, the liquid. Now that you're going to try and get as much of that liquid out as possible. At some point, the level of sugar content gets low enough, or you start to pull some compounds that might have harsher flavors in the beer, and then you'll stop that process. Now, there's always going to be a little bit of liquid left over, and the grain is going to absorb the liquid. It's like a sponge almost. So, yeah, you're dealing with, I don't know the moisture content of spent grain, but it's pretty high, enough for it to go bad if it sits warm for too long. So if you remove it quickly, you bring it to a dryer, you remove that moisture, and also infrared is killing anything that is on the grain as well. That is quickly becoming a stable food source, shelf stable as well. When you're talking about shelf stable food, you could probably speak to this better than me, but typically you're usually talking about moisture content. What's the moisture content in that food so that you're not growing mold on your bread that's, you know, sitting on the shelf? I know I talked one time to Alaskan Brewing Company, and I was really interested in their technology that they do. They run the boiler in their brewery that creates steam, that boils their wort, that, you know, makes their beer, and also heats their hot water. The flame is created by burning spent grain. And the steam that's created by burning their spent grain is then used to dry out the next batch of spent grain that goes into the boiler. So it's a cycle that just continues. They make beer, they use the spent grain, they dry it with the steam from two beers ago that's created by burning that spent grain. So they're drying the next spent grain they're going to use, and they're creating steam. And for them, it solves two problems. They're a remote brewery, so they don't have to pay as much money for natural gas to fire their boiler. And two, they don't have to pay to haul away heavy spent grain. They use it at their facility. And so it's just one of those processes that I was like, that's revolutionary. It took them a long time to figure out the nitty gritty and engineering of it. But it's a great process, and it's similar to what Kyle's talking about doing, but instead of burning it, it's something that you can use to, as a fiber and nutrient food additive too.
Wow. We're diving deep. It's craft malts, spent grain. We're here at Lamplighter CX Brewing in the Cambridge, Massachusetts. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meet and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meet and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's our 15th year. Congratulations, heritageradionetwork.org. Support us, become a member. So we're here in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Lamplighter Brewing, CX. They're more of a taproom location with brewer Tyler and Brewers Foods, Mr. Cracker of Spent Grains, Kyle. So one more time, you guys, give a quick introduction, and there's a lot of questions about what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm Tyler Fitzpatrick from Lamplighter Brewing Company in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
And I'm a Kyle Fiescanero with Brewers Foods.
So, Kyle, we're talking about you getting a piece of equipment that'll help dry out the spent grain and facilitate your process. A little more about that. And it sounds pretty far out, but it kind of makes a lot of sense, too.
Yeah. So we'll hopefully have this barrel dryer, spent grain dryer. We'll take grain from breweries like Lamplighter, pack it filled with a couple hundred pounds of grain at a time, and it'll come out finished food product the other end. And the idea is to get a few breweries together. You know, we can pick up other breweries' grain, bring it to the facility, and we could also process their grain. So I don't know how much Lamplighter pays per year in spent grain removal. I'm guessing it's somewhere around $10,000 to $20,000 a year. That's a lot of money, you know, and just extrapolate that over, I don't know, 20 breweries in the Boston area. You know, that's save a lot of people a lot of money. And then it could also feed a lot of people. So it's kind of a win-win for the breweries to get, you know, say it, but to get interested in what I'm doing, because I could save everyone a lot of time and a lot of money. And then when you say that, people start to get interested.
Well, one reason we're here is when I first met you, you introduced me to Tyler 3 years ago, introduced me to Blue Ox Malt. And there's definitely a connection with locally grown malt and these local breweries here in New England. And I feel like you guys are ahead of the curve in a lot of other parts of the country. Let's talk about you guys, Lamplighter, using craft malt. Tell us about the beer that we're drinking, and why is a malt that's, you know, it's malt, it's grown and malted in Maine or in Massachusetts. Why is that better for us than something from Germany?
Sure. So we're drinking right now Lamp Lager. It's an American lager, style-wise an American hybrid lager. It's about 20% malted maize. The malted maize or malted corn is from Valley Malt in Massachusetts. And the malted barley is from Blue Ox Malt in Maine. So, you know, we wanted to kind of make an American style light lager. We always love having these beers on a weekend or a hot summer day. So we wanted to do one of our own. And whenever we have the chance, I will always kind of focus on using locally sourced ingredients, whether it's fruit or barley or hops. So this beer was just a no-brainer. It's light. So when you're talking spent grain, the amount you deal with, it's on the lower end because it's not as strong as a beer. It's 4.1%, and so that means from a grain side of things, it's less grain in the mash tun because you don't need that much sugar to ferment to get to 4.1%. So it's a dry beer, but it's with combined with Cambridge's water chemistry and the freshness of this malt, you really can taste the breadiness and the subtle flavor of the corn as well. It's a light lager that's got tons of flavor. So we really love this beer. It's easy drinking, but also a lot of local flavor in here as well.
And then why corn? Is corn just something that's in American lagers?
Yeah, so corn is an adjunct used in brewing to lighten the body of beer. Malted barley is typically going to carry more unfermentable sugars to the fermentation versus corn or rice will carry more fermentable sugars due to the starch makeup of that grain. Some big American lager brewers use corn. Some big American lager brewers use rice. We chose corn because Valley Malt makes a wonderful malted maize. And we liked the American lagers that we all enjoy. We kind of like the ones that are brewed with corn versus rice. We think corn has a more flavor to it. And rice is a very clean, dry flavor, which some people prefer. We just felt corn was more up our alley for that little subtle flavor it gives. It's typically used as an adjunct in brewing to lighten the body of the finished beer. And when I say body, I'm referring to residual sugars after fermentation. So fermentation is consuming the sugars in beer. The yeast is consuming the sugars in the wort to create ethanol. And it doesn't consume all the sugars. And what's left behind is frequently referred to as body. So, a big stout that is full-bodied is going to have more residual sugars left behind versus an American lager that is light-bodied has much less residual sugars after fermentation.
Yeah, this is one of the cleanest corn lagers I've had.
No, thank you. Yeah, yeah. It's a tough beer for us to produce, and we love it. I was talking about this might be a whole nother podcast on water chemistry, but Cambridge's water is very full flavored, quite soft in a way, a little bit of temporary hardness, but a lot of sodium and chloride in the water, and that comes off as a sweetness. And much like Gatorade, if you took away the sugar, you could taste the salt. Chloride and sodium both have a kind of sweeter taste than, say, I'm blanking on
like hard water, like
Burton
on Trent.
It's like adding salt to when you're cooking. It enhances the sweetness of the flavor that's already in the dish. And if you add too much, you're going to taste the salt. But it's right at the level where it can make this beer taste a little bit more full body than it actually is. Water chemistry is one of the biggest, most important, I think, ingredients when it comes to making beer.
Since we're talking about that, pick another one of your beers that you brew here in Cambridge and tell us about the impact of water on the flavor or how you modify the recipe.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a baseline, we don't reverse osmosis any of our water. So we filter through carbon filters to remove any kind of sediment or any larger ions. But the smaller ions and minerals are going to make it through those filters. So we brew with Cambridge water. That can add a lot to a beer, and it can also make brewing a light lager a little bit harder because it's so easygoing and refreshing and nuanced that you can taste the water through that lighter beer. On a beer like, say, Dubliners, an Irish export stout, that's something where the saltiness of the water really enhances that roasted chocolatey flavor of that stout. It adds more body and depth. On a beer like, it's not up there, but A Lawyer's Guns and Honey is an American IPA that we brew with honey that is very different than a New England style or hazy IPA. We kind of, here at Lamplighter, we treat those two styles as different beer styles. I would refer to an American IPA as your classic IPA, like a Stone IPA from 10, 15 years ago, versus a hazy or New England IPA, in my opinion, is a totally different beast. I would not even say it's classic American IPA, I would say it's a totally other IPA category, because from the start, you're treating the water so much differently than you would every other style of IPA. It relies much more on the saltiness of the water to enhance the juiciness and the sweetness of the hops and the residual sugars of the body of the beer. They tend to be sweeter, they tend to be less bitter, and they tend to use American hops that have a lot of tropical and fruity flavors to them, and it just makes them taste even juicier. Versus that Lawyer's Guns and Honey I was talking about, we try and treat our water and add more gypsum to that beer. Gypsum is calcium sulfate. Sulfate is an ion that enhances the bitter perception of beers. It enhances the dryness of beers. And so if you drink the same IPA that was treated, water chemistry-wise, was treated to be a New England IPA versus what we would do as an American IPA, if everything else in that beer was the same, the bitterness in a American IPA is going to be cleaner. It's going to be focused and on the back of your palate, and it's going to linger and then dissipate. And it leaves you thirst quenched, and it leaves you wanting another sip. Versus when chloride is a more prominent ion in that beer, it muddles the bitterness and spreads it over your palate. It doesn't focus it. It doesn't, there isn't any gypsum there really to do that job. And it lets the bitterness linger a little bit more, which is typically why in New England or hazy IPAs, there isn't much bitterness at all, because it would be sloppy if it were there. So we try and make our New England IPAs to have a little bit of bitterness to them to give it some balance. We definitely believe in balanced beer at Lamplighter, and not let anything be too sweet or overpowering on your palate. But yeah, that is a good example of when water chemistry can completely change the output of what you're going for.
And then now back to spent grain. I'm thinking about it. I was in Denmark last fall at this cool brewery called Broel, B-R-O-E-L, and it means the Danish, it's beer plus water, and or bread plus beer or something. But what was interesting about Broel is that the guy started the brewery, he's an engineer, for similar reasons to you, Kyle, is sustainability interest. And one of the things he's most proud of besides his beer is that their 2.0 facility, they share with a mushroom farm, an indoor mushroom farm. And he said that because of the spent grain, it's the perfect food for mushrooms, because you were talking about having to, you know, stop growth on. So basically, they decided to share the facility with the mushroom grower indoors. And so basically, as soon as it comes out of the tanks, the spent grain goes right to where the mushrooms are going to be grown. What do you think about that? That's about as far as I got with it, but I know they were passionate about it.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the biology, nor...
Yeah,
I got the sense that they wanted to be in the same facility.
It's a wonderful growth medium for mushrooms.
Mushroom growers use it as a substrate to grow mushrooms, feed their mushroom farms. Also, people are using it as building materials. There's a lady in California using spent grain as edible coffee cups. Compostable coffee cups, you could actually eat them. So there's lots of people doing lots of stuff.
For something like that, end product, those also go through a dryer?
Correct. Yeah, she has a dryer to do that.
And what about for the mushrooms?
I think for the mushrooms, I'm not positive about this, but you would want to sterilize it in some way. And so if you dry it and use infrared and remove any sort of foreign microbe that might contaminate the growth of your mushroom, that would probably be a benefit. Now, if you're growing mushrooms, I'm sure you'll need to bring some moisture back to that grain after it's been sterilized. Now, depending on their processes using facility, they could get it straight from the mash tun and use it and not have to dry it, but I don't know. It would probably be safer and more sustainable to dry it first and then reuse it.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know when it goes from the brewer across the room to the mushroom people, I don't know what their steps were.
Yeah, I don't mushroom farm yet, but there's plenty of life in me. So
psilocybin's decriminalized in Cambridge.
Yeah, so we might need some.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Pique your interest there. Psilocybin mushrooms are decriminalized in Cambridge. I would guess, I don't know why, but I would guess mainly because there's a lot of research going into it right now.
You mean like psychedelic mushrooms?
Yes, yeah, yeah. A lot of research going into psychedelic psilocybin mushrooms right now, and you've got so many labs and biotech and big pharma companies in this city and Cambridge is also a pretty progressive city when it comes to that. I think, you know, within the next, who knows, it's taken forever for cannabis to be federally legalized, but you know, within the next 10 to 20 years, I assume we'll see a decriminalization, if not legalization, of psilocybin mushrooms for, at the very least, medicinal use, possibly recreational use as well.
One thing that Tyler said before, a while back, was keeping your dollar in the community. I think it's another, it's a huge reason of why Lamplighter uses a lot of their malt locally. Because every time he buys a bag of malt, he's supporting another company in the region. And that company is supporting another company in the region. You know, he buys a bag from Valley Malt, say, and Valley Malt has to buy the literal bag from a company that makes the bags for the grain, you know, in Holyoke. So now you're supporting their families. So just by drinking one beer made with local grain, you're supporting, you know, hundreds of people.
And the city of Holyoke too, and like tax dollars are going towards.
Yeah. I don't think people do understand supporting local is important, but I think you don't really, really, really understand it until you start to like understand, you know, the people that made my stickers live in New Hampshire. And it's just like, and then the people that work at the local stores have kids that go to school with your kids. And we're essentially all connected by these products, these beer, these crackers. And that's just another, you know, layer of complexity that goes into local food is, you know, when you buy something from an unsaid supermarket, you might be paying for the gas to go on their super yacht, you know, but when you buy a beer from Lamplighter, you're probably paying for a kid's tuition or a soccer ball. Like it's just a way your dollar goes a whole different direction. When you support local like that.
So right now I'm supporting local. I'm got one of your packages. It says brewers made with upcycled grains, rosemary flatbread crackers. I love these. I'm going to put them on my cheese plate later. So you're the spent grain guy. So you could get into growing mushrooms, but you really right now, give me the sales pitch again. You call me up. There's a machine. Who makes it and why do you need it?
Hey, this is Kyle Fiescanaro. I own Brewers Foods. We're an upcycled cracker, chip, pretzel, and cookie company that takes leftover grain from breweries. And we are trying to start the world's first spent grain drying hub in Boston, Massachusetts. We're trying to raise awareness of what we're trying to do. We're going to purchase a spent grain dryer, infrared capabilities, so that we can feed people with the spent grain that would normally get thrown away.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the pitch.
That's the pitch.
Yeah, if you're stuck in an elevator with me, that's it.
I want to thank all the guests for joining me today on Beer Sessions Radio. Big shout out to Armin Spengen, our engineer, Kyle of Brewers Foods, and Tyler of Lamplighter Brewing in Boston. We recorded this at Lamplighter CX in Cambridge, Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks so much. We'll catch you next time on Heritage Radio Network.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode?
Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.